Today, we're tackling a crucial question. Are you majoring in the minors when it comes to your gut health? In other words, are you focusing on minor details and trendy practices that can offer some marginal benefits, but totally neglecting the major heavy hitter factors that truly impact your gut health?
In this episode, we're going to take a deep dive into these major factors, including motility, gut microbiome diversity, immune function, your mucosal health, and the gut-brain axis. Yes, some of these are kind of a mouthful, but I promise we are going to make them super simple to understand, and you're going to understand why these should be the focal points of your gut health journey, as opposed to majoring in the minors, such as bone broth, lemon water, and celery juice.
Are you ready to change your tomorrow and start feeling good again? You're in the right place. Grab your coffee, and together, let's start doing wellness differently. I'm Heather Young, a certified personal trainer.
And I'm Jennifer Klutz, a registered dietitian nutritionist. Join us for conversations that will inspire you to ask better questions, remove the overwhelm, and discover what you can do to change your health now.
Welcome to the Critical Conversations Podcast.
For today, I really feel like I am channeling Maria in The Sound of Music. And I just want to say, let's start at the very beginning. A very good place to start.
I just never know what's going to come out of your mouth.
A good place to start is, what is gut health? Like, what are we even chasing when we're talking about healing our guts and improving the functionality of our gut health?
Basically, we're talking about the function of your GI tract. That is what gut health is. So what that encompasses is, right, eating and your food. So your stomach, your small intestine, your large intestine, and any of the extra organs that are involved in the digestive process, such as your liver and your pancreas, which help you break down fats, proteins, different things. So simply put, we are talking about your ability to digest food, your ability to absorb nutrients, and the composition and the integrity of your gut lining. So your intestines have a certain structure to them. And when your gut health is impacted, or you quote unquote have an unhealthy gut, oftentimes how that gut wall is structured has been changed due to the different bacteria that live in your gut, or the different mucus that's supposed to be lining the gut, or what's very, very trendy, you hear about leaky gut, which is something that can happen, but not quite how a lot of the fads tackle it. You can get leaky junctions in your gut wall, but we're supposed to have
some.
Yeah, you're supposed to have the ability for those nutrients to flow in and out of the gut lumen, because that's how we get nutrition. It's part of that process. So that's the easiest way I can explain it. It involves your absorption of nutrients and food.
Fascinating, because I want to circle back to what you just said about the leaky gut, because when I started my health journey so many years ago, leaky gut was definitely on the table. And what we know then, it was vastly different from what we know now. And I think it's a great way to frame this conversation, because we often look at things when it comes to having a really healthy gut, and we label it as black or white, good or bad, in or out, instead of as the insanely diverse, barely understood, haven't even really scratched the surface to get it, part of the body that it is. It's very rarely black and white.
No, the gut health is not black and white, and it is something that is individual to each person. So what's causing or impacting someone's digestive symptoms are often not what are impacting others. But with gut health, why it gets so murky is that you have similar symptoms, right? So what's causing someone's bloating or gas, or burping, or heartburn can be completely different than what someone else and the reasons why they're having it. But because the symptoms sound the same with to just a basic knowledge, you go, oh, you should take this supplement. This is what my dietitian told me to take for this, without the understanding of they understood where the dysfunction was coming from, and that might be the symptoms that you're experiencing, but the cause and the reasons why you were having those symptoms were determined and figured out, or at least you're working towards determining based on what they're having you do. And then someone goes and grabs the supplement and they have zero impact from it. In fact, they go, it made my heartburn worse. It made my bloating worse. It made my gas worse. And it's because it was not the same issue that was causing those similar symptoms. And I do believe that this is why gut health is so problematic for people actually getting to a place where they're like, oh, I'm not having gut health symptoms anymore, because they're just following a lot of influencers or trying to just take information that they're getting online. And it will sound similar to your issue. You will think, oh, this is me.
You've described me.
Yeah. And it's not.
Yes, because like bloating, which you just mentioned, by itself, this number's forever stuck in my head. And you tell me if I got it wrong, but you told me it was 37, 47.
No, 22. Typically 22.
22.
Different issues associated with bloating. So is that what you're, where yes, you're going with this?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's a lot. That's a lot.
It's a lot. But also there's cues and ways to figure out what is causing your bloating. And many people are getting stuck with really bad advice, like not chewing gum or not wearing too tight clothing. And yeah, those can cause bloating, but not typically the bloating that's causing someone to want to go to the doctor.
Yes.
Right? It's the occasional random bloating that you're like, wait, what happened? Where did this come from? It's not chronic, daily, lasts all day long bloating.
Makes you look like you're 6 months pregnant at least, or have a basketball or a watermelon in your stomach. Because there's bloating, and then there's uncomfortable bloating that is actually changing the physical structure of your body. It's so intense.
Yeah, I think bloating describes the just murkiness of social media with this issue, because there's this whole trend of let's normalize bloating. And yes, let's normalize normal small bloating. Okay, that's normal. But
the people pushing that are experiencing mild bloating.
No, they're experiencing major bloating. Oh, okay. Where because they didn't get help, or they just don't want to deal with it, or they read one post that said you're supposed to bloat, this is normal. Now they're dealing with what I would call major digestive issues, where you can visually see it. If your stomach is expanding, you know, inches, where you're talking 3 to 6 inches out, where, you know, the quote unquote, the joke is that you look 6 months pregnant, that is not normal bloating. And now we have online trying to normalize bloating that is clearly coming from some major digestive dysfunction.
Yeah, which is why this topic is so noisy, because you have this noise from both sides. Side number one is saying normalize the bloating, and then they're actually normalizing something that is building a system of dysfunction that's eventually you're going to pay the price for, mm-hmm. and because you've ignored it, and it is actually impacting the health of your body. And then on the other side, you have people who expect absolute perfection from digestion and the gut. And so then this idea that, you know, people do yeah. have their stomach size change as they put food in it versus not food in it. And they have this rigidity to the perfection of what digestion should be that also isn't helpful on the other side, because, you know, there's a lot of messiness in what's good and what's not helpful for the gut.
Yes, which is why I call it murky, mm-hmm. because you're going, yeah, some stomach changes, tiny bloating, or what you would call some fluid retention, absolutely can happen throughout the day. But what I commonly see online is not normal fluid accumulation or normal digestion changes. I'm often seeing, this is actually major digestive dysfunction, but we're trying to normalize it. So the murkiness there it's difficult. Because you want people to be getting good advice, and you also want people to not be stuck in the obsession that we have with visible ads or a stomach that visually is not normal, because we often have stomachs that are also coming or being produced from a disordered place.
Starvation.
Right. So again, the murky is difficult. That's why what I usually say is if you think you're having what is considered chronic debilitating bloating, which is distension, you have to unbutton your pants, you should be having gas, but you're not really passing a lot of gas, maybe only occasionally, and you feel like you're puffing from the front out and it's not going anywhere, where you are physically uncomfortable and it's causing even distension underneath your ribs that you can feel, that is not normal.
Yeah. And it needs to be addressed. And that's one of the big goals of today's podcast, is to just step away from the murkiness, also step away from the micromanagement, that majoring in the minors, and to like start looking at the really big ways that you can be checking in on your gut health and that you can be improving your gut health that don't involve buying a program or fancy supplement or flipping your life upside down and not being able to live it. And we want to get through all of those. So
yes, there are foundational things that foster a healthy gut that most people are not doing.
Yeah.
And so what I want from this conversation is for people to understand what those are, so that way you can start focusing on them. Because what I recommend for people, if they ask me this, is if you're doing these actions and you're doing them more often than not, there is a level of consistency to them where it's not on or off. You're consistently showing up and doing these daily supportive foundational actions for your gut health, and then you are still having really bad gut health symptoms, which usually includes what we've already mentioned, bloating, but also gas or heartburn or indigestion, or you're constipated or you're having loose stools. Those are all not normal or optimal gut health. So if you're having chronic symptoms, despite implementing these foundational actions, that is when I recommend that you should seek help from a professional, because you are going to get lost in the weeds if you try and figure out what's going on with your gut by just going online or trying to Google it. Because again, as I mentioned in the beginning, the symptoms are all the same for most conditions. There is so much overlap between what you are experiencing and versus what you actually have. You could spend years at giving yourself different diagnoses and or even working with someone who's not qualified to be giving you gut health advice, and you're believing that, right, you have SIBO or you have IBS.
Candida.
Or you have candida, or you have parasites, or, right, you're getting all these quote-unquote diagnoses that actually are not what's going on with your gut.
Yes, because the number one thing to think through with any kind of approach you're taking about your gut, in my opinion, is why is the body allowing this, or what's it being driven by? Because for a lot of the minor solutions for gut health, they won't tell you they're trying to band-aid something. They'll tell you they're getting to the root cause. But it is a band-aid in that it cannot answer the question, why did the body allow it in the first place? For example, candida. You know, they'll test your numbers and be like, oh my God, your candida numbers are so high. Happened to me personally. But it doesn't actually answer the question of why. So if you're just trying to lower the candida, you go on a candida diet, you strip out sugar, you strip out fruit, you create all of these different food insecurities and fears, but you don't answer the question of why the body allowed it, you're missing out on the healing, because candida can actually be very, very protective. And this is something we didn't know 10 years ago when I had it and it was high and went on a candida diet. But we know so much more now about the fact that there's always a reason why it looks like your body has a gut imbalance or has an issue with its gut. And a lot of times it's extremely protective and very smart.
Yes. Even if you came back with high candida, let's say you had a gut test that showed this, that doesn't automatically mean that you're just trying to lower candida. Because first of all, everyone has candida in their gut.
Always.
It's a part of our gut microbiome.
It's how
we
our body
want candida.
Things.
Yes. We actually need it. And so if you have a high level, the first question you need to uncover and unpack is, why is it high? But this is the foundational principle for any high level or
low level.
Off or low level with these gut tests. And I think as someone who's done a lot of gut tests and now even don't even run as many because how I see the gut and my perspective on the gut and getting fuller understanding and nuance with the gut, I no longer look at it as an, oh, we just have to remove these things, which is the primary thing you hear on the integrative side of things is, oh, you have to start by removing, by getting rid of the opportunistic bacteria, by getting rid of the parasite, by getting rid of the bacteria, or getting rid of, right? We're just trying to eliminate. But that's actually a backwards way of thinking about it, because in general, we do know that more often than not, especially like with an opportunistic bacteria, so it's not classified as good or bad. The fact of the matter is we don't really quite know what category it falls in. We're still trying to figure it out if it's in that category, or even if it's in a bad, quote unquote, category. The gut is very smart. And more research is showing this, that the gut is going to allow the excess of a certain type of bacteria if it believes it's protecting you. So if it's protecting you, that imbalance, quote unquote, that problem, quote unquote, could be the difference between you getting Alzheimer's versus not getting Alzheimer's, getting Parkinson's versus not getting Parkinson's, right? Getting a GI motility issue versus not. And so once you start to understand that it's not just about going in and blowing everything away, and instead it's taking a step back and asking, what does this specific bacteria that's showing up as high or low, what does it do as a whole? What do we know about it as a whole? Because with the opportunist bacteria, I no longer treat it like I was taught to treat it, which was, oh, get rid of it. What we know about bacteria is we need it to make nutrients. So what gets lost in this conversation is often the gut has picked up the slack for a nutrient deficiency going on, and it will upregulate specific gut bacteria that's designed to give you more B vitamins like B1, B2, B6, B12, and vitamin A. Like, there's so many different types of bacteria and the nutrient that it will help to produce in your gut that you can actually absorb, that your body can use, just like it does from the food that you eat to get these nutrients. So now, if someone brings me a gut health test, or if I do determine that doing a gut health test is the next best step for someone, it's not just getting it and saying, what can I kill, eradicate, and remove? It's instead taking a step back and saying, what needs healing? What needs support based on our understanding of knowing what upregulates, what downregulates when the gut is feeling stressed or the body is feeling stressed? And what I commonly work with is people who have chronic unexplained symptoms or chronic disease. And the backbone of this, from my perspective, is often driven by nutrient insufficiency or nutrient deficiencies and low energy availability. So it's often someone who has a dieting history or an inadvertent lack of eating enough food or getting enough nutrition in their diet. And so they're coming to me, and it is obvious, even from like blood work or their symptoms, that they are riddled with a lack of vitamins, minerals, and just phytonutrients and essential nutrients in general. And then you overlay that with the gut health test that they either bring me or we do. And more often than not, I see opportunistic bacteria or even quote unquote bad bacteria that also produces nutrition, also produces nutrients. And more often than not, you just give the nutrients this person needs. So B vitamins, let's just stick with that one. You start giving them the B vitamins that you believe that they are lacking. You start helping them eat the foods that contain B vitamins in it. Their gut symptoms resolve. Why? Because the gut is smart. The second you start giving it what it needs, it goes, okay, we don't need these opportunistic guys anymore. Let's start knocking them back. We don't need to allow this because they're actually getting the nutrition they need for us to be well. And it will legitimately self-resolve in most cases if it's being driven by a nutritional issue. And honestly, what I'm seeing more and more is it's commonly being driven by a nutritional issue.
Partially because we've now reached this era where so many people have made changes to their diet or made drastic changes to their diet based on all the advice and information that's available. Now we're at this point where you've been doing those changes for enough time where it has changed the ecosystem of the gut and you're starting to get to see, is it working? Is it not working?
Yeah, I'm working with people that have created debilitating gut dysfunction because they've done extreme diets.
Yes, and just if that's you, it probably came from a good intention or you didn't know what cards you were being given when you did it. So there has to be a lot of kindness and started to admit.
Oh, it's so confusing out there.
Yeah.
And right, you Google gut health. And 50% of what you're going to see on the front page is, oh, you should do plant-based.
Yeah.
Oh, you should try vegan. Oh,
keto.
Let's try carnivore. And automatically, right, you're already getting set up to potentially walk right into more and more gut dysfunction.
Yes.
Because you're like, well, this is on the first page, so this has to be meaningful. So that is why we're starting to get to a place with social and even Google and where we're trending towards with AI where you can't replace the practitioner. I wouldn't have probably said that 10 years ago. I would have said, no, be your own health investigator. Go do it. But now the interwebs are riddled with so much bad information that you're going to end up losing years along with losing your health without aligning yourself with someone you believe knows what they're talking about. And you believe, you know what? They have people's best interest at heart. They genuinely care if you have good gut health. They're generally going to give you accessible, available advice that you can do as a normal person who works a 9-to-5 job, who's not just sitting at home and can do 100 different activities. Right. If you're working with someone that's ultimately caring about whether or not you live a good life, you're going to get good advice versus someone who's trying to make money off of you or give you a quick fix or went to a practitioner, got their gut health healed, and now they're just trying to sell you what they did for their gut and don't even understand that that practitioner, there was reasons why they gave them what they did, and it doesn't mean that it's going to work for someone else. Worked for them because the practitioner figured out what they needed. And so this is the fuzzy and murky world that we are, that most people are currently in because, right, we're all trying to feel good. We all want to feel good. And especially if you have a chronic illness or a chronic disease, that's even higher on your list because you're just trying to, you know, get to a place where you can kind of feel like you're showing up halfway normal, halfway there in the day-to-day when you're dealing with something like a chronic issue.
So taking that image of majoring in the minors, I think now if we flip it to think about really big rocks versus really little rocks, you got your major rocks and your minor rocks. It's a race in two buckets. You have a bucket you're trying to fill up on one side of what are the good things that really give you the best chance to have a healthy gut. You want to take the biggest rocks and fill up that bucket fast with good things. You don't want to have to be putting little stone after little stone after minor stone after minor stone into that bucket. So you want to fill it up with the big things. And then you have your second bucket, which is like, are you filling it up with things that irritate the gut, things that break down the health of your gut wall, things that make life hard, that take your energy, that really cause it to spill over into this dysbiosis or this gut that needs healing? And with that case, you don't want to be removing little things where now you can't empty the bucket fast. You're just taking little thing out after little thing out instead of big things out to help lower that bucket, to lower the irritation that your gut is experiencing. So whether you're trying to fill your gut up with good things or remove bad things, you still want the big boys. You want the heavy hitters that save you time, save you energy, and save you money. And that's what we're going to start diving into right now. So what's number one? The big major stone of goodness that they can stick into their gut to start producing a healthier gut.
Okay, so step number one is we first think about absorption and digestion. So food breakdown. So the number one place that we start is super boring, super not fun, super like you look at me and go, but really? And that is chewing. So the average person, we are eating distracted. We are eating rushed. We don't really stop to eat. What I'm commonly working with is people who don't even want to take the time to eat. And then when they do eat, it's legitimately, how fast can I do it? And the average person right now chews between 8 and 10 times. And we know that from research and just wives' tales that you should be at least chewing 30 times. This seems like a chore and utterly ridiculous because we are a go, 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 go culture, mm-hmm. right? Because if you just think back to the 1800s, right, eating food.
That was your entertainment.
That was very entertaining.
The joy in life.
You're going
to
sit
there.
Enjoy
something good.
You're going to chew it. You're going to even think because it's like a game.
What does this taste like?
Let's taste it. Let's count to 30. I've learned that this really impacts digestion. And they actually had the time to realize that it did impact digestion. Because what I commonly encounter is someone does it once. Like, oh yeah, I did it at one meal. And then the next question is, what did you notice? And the common answer back is, oh, I have no idea. I quit paying attention. And that's where we all are. It's you're not thinking about it anymore. You try and do something once and then you think that should have impact. That's not going to have impact. Right? All of your meals, chewing adequately over and over and over again, this boring foundational principle is what's going to lead statistically to just changed gut health outcome automatically. And it's yeah, the violins are playing. It's sad.
But it's so simple.
It's so simple and free.
And free.
And doable. The second thing on top of that is, right, we're running in, we're rushed, we're scattered, we're just trying to get it done. And this brings into effect the whole gut-brain access. And what's been lost with meals is we used to pray before meals. We used to have gratitude before meals. We used to acknowledge that food in front of us, which automatically puts you into a rest and digest parasympathetic nervous system response, which basically means you're not stressed out, so you can digest the food better. Most people are in what we would call a sympathetic nervous system response, which means your digestion is being throttled. The brakes are on. You're not able to send digestive enzymes as well. You're not able to break down the food as well. Your body's going, this person is stressed out. There's so much negative stressed out hormones being flown into my body, right? Adrenaline and cortisol. I better stop the blood flow from the gut. We better shut it all down. Let's just keep it in here. No food's moving anywhere. And that's the second most common reason that people are having just massive gut issues is their motility is not moving the way that it should. The food is not moving along the gut the way that it is supposed to, and it's being slowed down. And then you're commonly going to end up also with constipation at that point.
Yes. And so the stress is a major impactor on that. But then what I also see is when you're stressed, very rarely are you moving more or exercising more. So you reach this stress state that's impacting your digestion. And then you're down regulating how often you go to the gym and if you're exercising and how much you're in a sedentary survival mode versus an active, you know, more relaxed and exercising mode, because that motility is then driven further into the ground by a lack of consistent, enjoyable exercise for the body.
Yeah, just movement in general.
Yeah.
Because moving the body is going to increase the gut motility. It's going to help food move along the way that it should. And we're becoming a mostly sedentary culture. But technically speaking, if you are struggling with constipation or you're struggling with thinking, you know what, I feel like I have slow food motility. I get bloating. I get a lot of gas. I feel like my food backs up, quote unquote. I feel stuck. Because that's what we're focusing on first is your motility. Chewing is essential to that, where we started. Second thing is gut-brain access, also essential to that motility. But then we're at the physical, functional, okay. Like how do you keep things moving? And movement is key for that. And just in general, if you go look at gut health and what keeps gut, you know, really good and thriving, when you look at research, is the standard recommendation is the same recommendation that you have for moving your body, which is 150 minutes of movement a week. And again, the average American is not even close to achieving that.
But more importantly, the average American is not spreading that out. Because you could tell me you worked out all day Saturday and put all 150 minutes in.
That.
But every single day of your life, your body wants that movement to allow the peristalsis to naturally happen, to be that pump that moves the food through your body. So it's not just looking at what do I get for my total minutes. It's looking at how often am I giving my body this gift of movement, because it's playing a role in how your digestive health feels. Because when you start to get the dysbiosis, motility is just a huge driver. Is the food going through too fast so you can't absorb it? Or is it going through too slow where then all these bad actors get to take up free rent and you're
back up into your system?
It's grinding along your intestines. So motility matters, but it's such a simple thing to start checking in on. So if you've checked the box on movement, your motility is still not great. Then the next thing is your hydration. Also a free thing you can check in on yourself if you're struggling with your gut health.
Yeah, so the minimum that you want. So what I commonly see is first primary problem is people are under drinking anything. So just fluid in general, liquid. I don't care what category you want to say it is, you know, whether you're drinking pop, iced tea, coffee, tea, right? Most people are not drinking water, which is a major problem. But on top of not even drinking water, they're just under drinking fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so problem number one. Problem number two, let's say we have someone who drinks enough fluid, but what gets lost is that you should be drinking a minimum of 40 ounces of water. Water, not pop, not tea, not coffee, not soda. When you look at the literature, we know that gut motility needs 40 ounces of water. And it needs water because water includes minerals, including magnesium. Magnesium is essential for gut motility, but just the lubricating factor of water, because of all the intangibles in it, if you're not consuming just plain old boring water and at least 40 ounces of it, you are absolutely more likely to have gut health issues.
And the same rule applies to water as applies to movement. You could down 40 ounces of water all at once at the end of the night. You'd be like, oh, dang, I didn't drink water. Down the hatch it goes. But your body would prefer to consistently have that lubricating water throughout the day.
Yes. This is the same principle with eating.
Yes. One huge monster meal that stretches your stomach out versus consistent energy at reasonable timing throughout the day.
Yeah, motility is dependent on the trigger of putting food in the stomach. And so what I commonly see is people skipping meals or only eating two meals. And again, you are going to be looking at me and saying, I'm bloated. I feel like I have lead in my stomach. I have tons of gas. And right, the fasting trend, while fasting can have its benefits depending on what you're using it for, fasting is not, in most cases, going to improve gut health. It depends. There's a small asterisk there. I will say it's small, tiny. We're not going to get
healing
into it this time. But in general, for the average person and what the average person...
Not someone with a chronic condition or this checklist.
Yeah, there's asterisks,
things,
right? Yes. There's a checklist where it could be beneficial and I am recommending it for you. But for the average person, no. Fasting is going to get you behind the eight ball and is going to create more gut health issues. But especially if you are not eating consistently, you are going to complain more often of gut health issues.
So for every single thing that we mentioned, though, these are big rocks, guys. These fill up your bucket so fast or take irritation out of the bucket so fast. So you could be looking at buying more gut health supplements or the fancy tonic or the drink or the program because it's not working. But if you stopped and you said, I'm just going to look at these big major rocks and say, one, am I drinking enough throughout the day and am I getting some of that as real water? Two, am I eating enough throughout the day and am I getting that in reasonable meals for my body to have energy and then to improve that trigger of actually moving the motility of the gut and having it digest food? And am I chewing it and being present when I'm eating it so that my body's in a relaxed parasympathetic state and the digestion has already started in my mouth? Am I getting regular movement that's then moving everything I've been eating through my body? And then sleep. Am I getting sleep where the body can rest and you're not eating? Like, these are all big things that make radical improvements. And for most people, we want to believe we're doing these. We have this invisible kind of perception of how we're doing. But here's the question for you now. If you're struggling with your gut health, if you hired a video crew to follow you around all day, 24 hours, to see the stress, to see when you drink, to see when you eat, to see how you chew, to just be able to see the presence you have with your body and within your life, would you actually be checking consistently these boxes, these majors? For most of us, the answer is no. It just is. And then that's what's leading to some of this breakdown of the gut.
Yes, because then the next layer you have from motility, gut brain access is, right, the tissue, the mucosal lining, and again, the stress, but also the skipping meals. But then when you do eat, what are you eating? And oftentimes it involves either a fast food meal, which we know that the fats in there are not the best for supporting gut health. Or on the flip side, you know, you're coming home after a long day and you are choosing to drink alcohol, and alcohol is a major gut irritant. And depending on how often you're reaching for that choice, you're going to be eroding the health of your mucosal lining. So you start to build in more likelihood that your gut health is going to not be the greatest depending on how often you're having to eat outside of the house where you're not making your own food, because there's just more, you know, irritants, right? Including sugar, including more, you know, unhealthy fats.
High level of sodium.
High level of salt, which is going to be creating its own set of issues, including more bloating. And, right, you start to get, right, which came first, the chicken or the egg, which is what happens with gut health. Because when you start just kind of trying to keep it super simple and it sounds like it's this and I just have to do this one thing, aka drink bone broth, you're going to get limited results, because the foundational lifestyle for taking care of your gut is not there.
Yes. So back to what I said at the beginning, let's start at the very beginning. If you're frustrated with your gut health, if you've been starting and stopping and failing, if it still doesn't feel good, if you have major, major issues with it, it's good to just stop and do a check-in and say, am I truly consistently, like really consistently, I'm talking 80 to 90% of the time, you are doing these major gut supporting actions? That's when you can start to look at the minors and be like, okay, now we need to like really go granular and figure out why it's still not working. For most of us, though, it will make such a huge difference. And there's so much hope and empowerment in that, because it's one thing to have no answers and to think your gut's the special one that's broken and cannot be fixed. But it's another thing to know, like, wait a second, there's a lot of things I can rewind and really start to pay attention to that are probably I'm leaving them on the table when it comes to my health. And great news, every single one of these things for your gut is great for your body and your brain in general. So it just investing the time and being doubling down and being like, how consistent am I really, honestly, truly? It's going to help improve the whole well-being of your body. But it starts with honesty of how consistent you're actually doing these major gut supporters.
Right. These are the major hitters for establishing good motility, stopping before eating and doing stress reduction behaviors is key for that motility process, but also that gut-brain access. But then also what you are eating and how you are chewing is going to be impacting the lining of the gut and the structure of the gut and the inflammation of the gut. But last but not least, I would say a big one to mention, which is really going to build into supporting the immune function of the gut and also the barrier of the gut, is how much fiber are you eating?
Yes.
So the average client that I see consumes typically around 9 to 10 grams of fiber a day. That's what my data says. But then if you look at the data of just Americans in general, that's typically where it falls. It falls anywhere between 9 and 14 grams of fiber per day. So we don't meet the recommended for females 25 grams of fiber a day, and for males it's 40 grams of fiber a day. And that is because male and female guts are different. And so what we need is different. So but to go back to fiber, what often happens when you're having gut health issues is fiber starts to kind of seem like it's the enemy.
Yeah, and irritant.
And the irritant. And I find that this is, again, another murky area, because some of the foods that are high in fiber can be causing other gut reactions that don't actually have anything to do with the fiber. It can be due to other components of that food, like histamine being present, or it's a high glutamine food. These are foods that have interaction in your gut, and if you're not handling them well or processing them well, you're going to get overt gut symptoms from them. This is especially problematic with the gluten conversation. Oftentimes, fiber reactions get confused for gluten reactions. Mm-hmm. And so then they switch to gluten-free and they go, oh, gluten was a problem. I feel so much better on a gluten-free diet. And a gluten-free diet can become what's called a low residue diet. So it can become very low fiber, very low irritant present foods. And so you're actually band-aiding a very bad gut issue, because you just blindly took out foods that were high in fiber and you band-aided it with a gluten-free diet, and you think you solved your gut health issue, and all you did was make it go silent, quote-unquote. You just are allowing it to thrive and flourish on a low level because you removed the overt symptom. And this is the big, big thing that I'm starting to see more and more often, is people are coming to me, they think they have figured out their issue and they've been doing something for years, and then they come to find out that they were causing lifelong damage by band-aiding a really big problem with a solution that wasn't it. It just made the overt heartburn or gastrointestinal distress be okay, quote unquote. And that's why you really want to make sure you know
the value of the choice.
Yes.
And the outcome.
So with the fiber, many people, they end up eating one really high fiber meal and then they eat really low fiber meals, and they're not breaking apart their fiber consumption.
Sounds kind of like the movement and the hydration.
It's all the same. I know. It's like you think you're doing this good thing, right? So I see so many women come to me and at lunch they eat these giant, and I mean way too many vegetables, too many beans, laden salad. Where I read their data and my tummy hurts. It really, 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 really hurts. And I just feel so awful for them because they think they're doing something good.
Yeah.
And they're over consuming good things. You can over consume anything. And this is the nuance really being lost in the nutritional space, is you can eat too much broccoli. You can eat too many beans. You can eat too many of something where you were never designed to consume that much of it.
But we don't really, especially in the Western culture mentality, think that bigger isn't always better. It's just a default setting. Make it more, make it better if it helps you in some degree, without ever saying, but what's the amount? What's the threshold of benefit? Can there be too much? It's just a foreign concept to the whole like supersize me mentality.
Yes, the concept in nutrition that's being lost is the idea of what is good versus bad is getting very murky and completely backwards, right? So like the meat conversation, like how many people believe that meat leaves a residue in the gut is mind-blowing, and it does not, right? It's one of the easiest things for the body to break down. And that's where we're getting to, is these really healthy whole foods are being demonized, including dairy, which is so essential for gut health, protein, which is essential for gut health. If you are under eating protein,
your lining has no shot.
There's no shot. And this is, I would say, the primary driver of all gut health dysfunction. Besides nutrients that I mentioned at the beginning, this is one of them. Protein, under eating protein. The average person that I'm seeing is just not hitting even basic needs for optimal protein. And it's because they're scared to eat animal protein. And they're trying to overconsume protein sources that you don't digest well at all, including things like quinoa or beans.
Pea protein.
Or even, pea protein.
And then if you're someone who's doing it for your own personal reasons or ethical reasons, you have to know that you have to completely switch your approach. It's undersold and just underpromised as to what it will be like in your body if it's not managed appropriately.
Yeah. So back in the 80s, when, first of all, in any of my classes too, when we were learning how to help someone be vegan or even vegetarian, it was automatic if someone was on these diets that they should be seeing a dietitian because of the nutritional deficiencies that you are most likely going to develop without a thorough understanding of what to replace the foods that you removed with,
yeah,
with instead, right? And even the books written in the 80s for going vegan for ethical reasons or vegan for vegetarian reasons or health reasons, they were so good at saying, do not just do this. You need to go find a professional to walk you through what you need to replace these essential nutrients with, because the consequences of the disease that you will develop because you are losing major nutrition for ethical reasons that you believe is really, really important, right? Because you're allowed to choose to not eat these for ethical reasons. If that is a burning, you know, concern for you and it's something that you really care about, great. But what got lost in the 90s and the 2000s was, oh, just do it, just remove the foods, and you don't even really need to replace it with anything. You can just eat what you want, right? Oreos are vegan. And we're seeing from my perspective, we are seeing the harms of this complete lack of editors making sure that they were putting at the back of books or in moments where things were being removed. They got rid of all of those statements that legitimately, why they removed them. When you read these books in the 80s, you're like, maybe I don't want to do this. Like, maybe I could harm myself. And that's exactly what the reverence for it that you should have, because you are doing something that you're saying, I believe this moral component is more important than the risk
of long-term
to my
health. Yeah.
And that was lost completely.
And it's something to carry forward into any and all choices that you make for quote unquote healing your gut is, are you looking at a PDF or a program that is just cutting out major food groups and removing large amounts of foods, just like Jennifer was describing specifically for vegan? There's so many gut healing programs that are just like, okay, here we go. No gluten, no dairy, no alcohol, no sugar, no, all these things, massive removals.
Corn, no soy, no lentils, no beans. Like you get to the point where what got lost in translation was, but what are you getting?
And what people don't understand is it's the same as the diet industry benefiting from, they always take your money and get you to have that high of success off of the first 12 pounds of starvation, where you no longer have food in your gut, you don't have the weight of digesting food, and you don't have water in your body because you've taken out carbs and different food groups. So you think you're winning for the first 12 pounds, and then you hit the wall of destruction for diets. It's the same with gut healing. They take advantage of the fact that there is always a honeymoon period. It's what you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Honeymoon period, where when you just blanket remove something big or take out the fiber or take out the digestion and give it some rest, to a degree, you're going to have this calming response initially.
Well, it's a high. So I think the hardest thing to understand with this is if you are an unethical person, you can design programs that utilize science to create an outcome that's not real.
Yes, because it's the brain chemistry being altered, all of it.
So you get a high. You're running on adrenaline, right? These programs, you feel like you're on it. You will feel like you have mental clarity. Like
I'm so snappy with my brain.
Yeah, I'm getting my life back.
Meanwhile, you're burning on cortisol.
Well, you're burning your muscle. You're burning resources that you really need while you run on this high, right? While you run on this physical response from this dramatic removal, from all these rules, from building this sense of control, right? The science of understanding the mindset and what's going on physically in the body, I kind of describe it as the hush-hush secret that the diet industry doesn't want people to understand is it's designed to make you think it works. That's the whole point. And it's based on science. And if you can sell your soul and say, all I care about is money under the guise that I'm making you healthier, and you know that you're not making people healthier, but you're pretending you're making people healthier because, oh, well, they'll feel a little better with a little bit of the weight lost. You are going to create this false reality for people, and it's based on science, and you can do it. I could do it.
I know. I know. Right? Good.
Right. But
you can do it for gut healing as well. And so,
oh yeah, but you can band-aid the problem away by removing anything that could be causing a problem. Like what I was talking about with not understanding that it was never the gluten, that it might have been the fiber, and there's so many other things it could have been besides the gluten. And you think you've solved the problem, and all you did was make it go
for a
and
while.
And it's still thriving.
Until it comes screaming back.
Until it comes back with a disease state or a really detrimental symptom.
Yes. So to wrap up, you've got somebody who has had gut health problems. They have tried some of these things. Like, where are you imploring them to start afresh this time? And how are you asking them to address it this time, to stop majoring in the minors and start to finally experience some change in how their gut feels? For that person, they're discouraged, Jen. Mm-hmm. They've tried these things. Mm-hmm. So ego gets involved, but I am putting in work. Uh-huh. I am trying. You have gambler's remorse, but I bought the program. I need to complete it. But this is how my family's eating. This is what my best friend is doing. We're talking about a person who has a lot of information coming in. Where do they start?
They start with very boring basics that we've already talked about, but the primary one being chewing. And within that, when you give yourself that goal or that reminder, you are going to see how difficult it is to chew. On average, to get to 20 chews, your jaw is probably going to be tired. By the time you get halfway through your meal, you're definitely going to be over it. And that's not an invitation to quit. That is an invitation for more discovery of understanding, wow, I have left something really integral on the table, and it's been not happening for years because my jaw doesn't even have the ability to go 20 chews and not be tired before my meal is even over. And that's the reframe on that. I really challenge anyone listening to count your chews. See how tired you are before you even finish your meal. See how over it you are before you even finish the meal. And this should be norm for you. Like from you being a little tyke, chewing multiple times into a puree technically should have been coached into you. This should be just a part of who you are. You shouldn't even have to think about it. But culturally, we've been taught the opposite. We've been taught to eat as fast as possible and clean off the table as fast as possible. And we didn't develop optimal eating skills from a very young age. So give yourself the opportunity to discover that something really boring could be really life-changing, because the lie within our culture is that boring is boring. And the truth actually is that boring could change your life. And if you never give yourself that opportunity, then you're going to stay stuck. Because I can tell you, if you feel stuck right now with your gut health and trying to heal it, and you've lost all hope, then that tells me that the information that you're reading, the information that you're listening to, the people that you're surrounding yourself with are giving you a lot of unhelpful information. That's the tell on that. That's not the tell that you're supposed to lose hope within your gut health journey. The tell is, if this information is not working, then maybe where I'm getting the information from is not the most quality. And if something is telling you that you need to twist your life into a pretzel in order to achieve it, like healing can only happen in this glass bubble, that is also a tell that it is not coming from a reputable source, because you can be healing your gut even if you have a loved one going through cancer right now. You can be healing your gut even if you have a kid that's not sleeping through the night. You can be healing your gut even if your job is the most stressful thing that you've ever experienced in your entire life. The lie is that you have to wait for those situations to go away. And I think that's one of the biggest reframes that I could leave someone with is you can be healing yourself. You can be healing your body and taking meaningful, simple actions right now, right even after you stop listening to this. Go get a glass of water. Go drink a glass of water and enjoy it. Instead of being like, oh, I got to drink the glass of water. Let's just get it down. It's, I get to drink a glass of water right now. I'm giving good things to my gut.
I'm lubricating my gut.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I might have a good bowel movement after this. And it's legitimately starting to build those building blocks of how you talk to yourself, but also how you take care of yourself. You can take care of yourself in the most stressful, difficult times. And it does not mean that you have to become all-consuming and self-absorbed in order to quote-unquote heal. It means that you just have to take the time, the minimal time that you should be giving yourself as another human being within the situation. You are also a human. The people you're taking care of, they're human, their needs matter, but your needs matter as well. And just basic, common care needs. So, chewing. Number one, give yourself that gift. Drinking water. If you have not taken the time in a very long time to truly check in on how much you drink, give yourself that gift. Because finding out that you are not drinking as much as you think you are, that's important. Because dysfunction is being allowed to thrive with your mind telling you that you're doing well at it. And the reframe on that is, but what it most people aren't. Like the reality is when I tell people, no, you legitimately have to write this down. I need to see you record your fluid intake. Just giving me I do this occasionally. While I believe in your best intentions, I do. I have never had anyone come back and be drinking optimal water. They fall into two categories. I get people who are feeling miserably, and I get people who are overflooding themselves with fluid. Like we're talking, oh, I'm at 150 ounces. And then they don't understand that that's a problem in and of itself. I never have someone optimally drinking what their body uniquely should be drinking. And so you should definitely work with a practitioner to even just get your correct amount of fluid intake, because what you find on the internet, it's insane amounts of water. That's a whole other podcast, I know. So
Chewing and water.
And then last but not least, what are your bowel movements doing? Look up the Bristol stool chart. And if you're like, I think I'm going to start working with someone for my gut health, or even just for you tracking to see what these changes are doing, just these two, the water and the chewing, you want to start recording, what does your bowel movement look like? If you want to reverse gut symptoms, you have to become very comfortable with looking down into the toilet, of seeing what is going on with my poop. We're a pro poop space over here, as you can tell. We all poop. And I think one of the biggest ways gut dysfunction is allowed to thrive in our culture is because we act like you shouldn't have to poop, when in fact it's integral to long-term health, right? The irony is within it. I just boggle my mind. You need to poop to live. And so get comfortable looking down into the toilet. What's it doing down in there? Right? What does it look like? And then look up the Bristol stool chart and start writing down the numbers that you correlate with, because it helps. One helps you. Oh, I don't have enough water. That's what this one means. Oh, I don't have enough fiber. That's what this one means. First of all, you can be your own little detective. That part's allowed. You know, there's a standardization there. And there's reasons why those different types of stool are showing up. There's common reasons. And then if by you doing these things, change isn't happening, you do need to work with someone. You need to work with someone reputable that's going to get you forward progress. The gut has the fastest cellular turnover out of any other part in your body. The gut wall turns over every 3 days, which is why if you get diagnosed with celiac disease and they're like, oh, your gut wall has been rubbed down to nothing. Guess what? That gut wall is already pretty much optimal and new within 12 weeks, right? That because it's fast. And that's the lie, I think, within the gut health healing world that I want to start breaking through, which is it is not supposed to take you years to start feeling better with your digestion. Digestion, the gut wall, even gut bacteria, it rolls over the fastest, right? Healing nerves, that's the slowest. Changing over bone, not the fastest either, but it does happen. That there's a schedule for everything, and the gut heals quickly with the right input.
So there is hope for quick transformations in how you feel. Obviously, some things take time in the body, and that's another conversation, but you should be noticing differences, and just these big heavy hitters we mentioned today can all start to make a dramatic difference in just how you're paying attention to and being present for the act of eating and moving your body and drinking water that can change how your gut feels. So our final takeaway is start looking at the majors, stop majoring in the minors, and see what that can do to start to dramatically change how you feel. Thank you for joining us for today's episode. I hope you learned something new. If you're scratching your head and you're not getting answers, especially when it comes to your digestion and how your gut feels, I would encourage you to book a session with Jennifer. Gut health is one of her specialties, especially looking at the nuance beyond what the average standard practitioner is going to take a look at. She's also amazing at interpreting labs and finding out what nutritionally is really going on inside the body. We want to keep producing episodes like this for you, but we need your help to do it. If you could take the time to subscribe to the show to make sure the episodes drop into your quote-unquote podcast inbox, or if you could leave us a 5-star review, it helps the show show up when people are searching for answers to questions amidst the sea of podcasts that's out there. It's a small, simple thing that actually makes a really big difference for us to be able to continue to do the show. I also want to remind you to share the show, whether on social media or just emailing it directly to a friend who came to mind, in order to help other people bump into these new ways to think about gut healing and taking care of their body. And no matter where you are on your journey of taking care of your gut, I just want to remind you of the thing we always say that we truly mean that changes everything, and that's to be kind to yourself in the process of change.